From WBUR Boston and WRNI Providence, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Religious battles rage around the world, in the Middle East, Africa, Southeast Asia, Europe. In the U.S., faith-based politics are in high gear, and more than that, in power. Now comes a voice of backlash. Author Sam Harris sat down to consider the bloody history of religion and the role of religious faith in a nuclear age, an age of terror. And Mr. Harris concludes, religion is dangerous, that its bad outweighs its good, that for the sake of life on Earth, it's time for God to go the way of Zeus. In 21st century America, let alone the Middle East, this is heresy. But in America, we get to talk about it. Straight up, tonight on Point, Sam Harris and his hard, no-apologies critique of religion. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you say? Can we talk about this? Can we pick religion up and look critically at it for an hour? Or does that conversation itself offend you? Do you see a danger in belief, or is it all upside for you, for the planet? You can join the conversation tonight at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Joining me now from Los Angeles is Sam Harris, author of The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. Excuse me. The New York Times calls his book fierce and fearless. The Los Angeles Times calls it an unabashed anti-religious polemic. It's got buzz. Sam Harris, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
Also with us tonight from Hanover, New Hampshire, is On Point News analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly magazine. Hello, Jack. Good to have you.
Hello, Tom. Hello to our guest.
So, Sam Harris, you're breaking taboos right and left here. This is the time when religion is supposed to be discussed in almost all settings with kind of reverence. And I've got to ask you what your motivation is here. We can see that religion's got a bloody history, a lot that's come in its trail that's not at all pretty, and yet millions of Americans have been raised being taught to look at the beauty of it. And I have to say, you know, I've seen countless examples of charity and love and I don't know, some of the deepest insights on the planet coming out of religion. Why are you so angry? Why are you so upset about it, Sam?
Well, it was my immediate reaction to September 11th. I literally began writing this book on September 12th, 2001. And the moment it became clear that we were in a religious war and the taboos you mentioned around criticizing religious faith itself kept us from realizing the circumstance we're in. And we're bewitched by this euphemism that we have a war on terror. And when it's quite clear that we actually are at war with Islam, which is not the same thing as saying that we're at war with all Muslims, but we are most definitely at war with some of the core doctrines within Islam, recommended to all Muslims in the Quran and the Hadith. And we're paying a terrible price for overlooking this fact. We're not even prosecuting a war of ideas with the Muslim world. We're not obliging moderate Muslims, wherever they are, to start a conversation that uproots these dogmas, particularly the dogma of martyrdom and jihad.
And you're pretty tough on Islam, and we'll talk about that as we move forward here. But I want to make it clear at the outset that you're not singling out Islam for your criticism here. You're very tough on Christianity, on Judaism. It really is a kind of a broadside at religion and faith. You call faith the devil's masterpiece. That is ironclad, guaranteed to get a lot of people riled up these days. Give us the critique. What is it about religion that you find so offensive, or in your words, dangerous and destructive?
Well, there are two levels to this. There's one, just the sheer lack of evidence for these beliefs. It's only on matters of faith that we allow people to make claims about the nature of the universe completely unsupported by evidence, and we don't challenge them. If I came on your show and said that the Holocaust never happened, I would immediately feel pressure from you, conversational pressure, to start making sense. And if I didn't, you would very quickly dismiss me as someone who is not to be trusted, certainly on matters of European history. Now, I can come on this show, however, and say that I'm quite certain that the creator of the universe wrote a book. And in this book, homosexuality, for instance, is derided, and therefore I know that gay marriage is an abomination. And I can be a senator on the floor of the Senate and not be criticized for this belief, and yet this belief is completely uncoupled from the world of evidence. And we're paying a terrible price for this on to take specific issues like stem cell research. This is one of the most promising lines of research in biology, and yet we have college-educated politicians blocking, to a large degree, impeding this research on the basis of dogmas, specifically now a dogma that the soul enters the zygote at the moment of conception, dogmas that have no basis in fact, no basis in sensory or logical evidence, and we can't even criticize their points of view because faith is sacred in our culture.
So you want to come at it first as a scientist and say, I want a kind of scientifically credible evidence or I don't want to hear about it.
Well, the thing to recognize is everyone is a scientist in that regard. If someone tells you your wife is cheating on you, you want evidence. And you want evidence if you're a fundamentalist, if you're a secularist, an atheist. You're equally – people are all rigorous on every other issue except for matters of faith. And I'm the first to admit that there really is a core truth here, spiritual truths, ethical truths that we want to come to terms with. It's just that there's no reason that we have to believe the preposterous to do that.
Okay, so you say it's preposterous. Of course, believers don't look at it that way at all. They say it gives my life meaning. It gives substance. It speaks to my deepest questions about life and the cosmos and the purpose of all this.
Well, giving your life meaning is not enough for a belief to really be a belief about the world. If I told you that I believed that there was a diamond buried in my backyard that was the size of a refrigerator, and you asked me why I believe this, and I said because it gave my life meaning, you would write me off as an idiot or a lunatic. That's not what a belief is. The only way to believe something is true is to believe that it really is true, that your belief really does map on to a larger reality. And when you get into the details of why people believe that the Bible was written by God, say, or that Jesus is the Son of God, they really do have reasons. They just don't have sufficient reasons because our culture never obliges them to really make sense, to really be intellectually honest across the board. And all I'm arguing for, really, in my book, it's a deeply offensive book, it's true, to many people, but I'm really just arguing for intellectual honesty, that people no longer win points in our culture for pretending to be certain about things they manifestly cannot be certain about. And I'm simply saying that our certainty, our conviction, has to scale with the evidence. And we play by these rules in every other area of discourse. We just don't do it on matters of faith.
You go on to make the case that religious belief is now, in your words, antithetical to our survival. Here's the danger element. Why dangerous? Many people see it as their salvation.
Well, what is uniquely consoling about religious belief is that it takes the sting out of death. It really is. It's the story that tells you that death is not a bad thing, despite appearances. And this is why it is so deeply attractive to so many millions and millions of people. But in geopolitical terms, we want the sting in death. People who are not deterred by the threat of death are supremely dangerous when they get their hands on the big bombs. And we do not want millenarian Christians who think Jesus is going to come down out of the clouds any moment and save the day to be writing our nuclear policy or deciding how any Mideast peace crisis is resolved or not resolved. And these people not only vote, they do get elected. And in the Middle East, needless to say, beliefs about paradise and about jihad are the Middle East is brimming with these beliefs. And so what we have are religious beliefs, religious faith, playing both sides of the board in a very dangerous game.
And in that, you're not only throwing stones at fundamentalists, you're throwing stones at moderates, and really moderates in particular. You say that the idea of religious tolerance embraced by religious moderates is one of the principal forces driving us toward the abyss. This is not necessarily intuitive. What do you mean?
Right. You just have to look at the discourse of that is urged upon us by religious moderates. Really, the soul of religious moderation at this moment is what people know as political correctness. It's really this notion that being inoffensive and not calling a spade is somehow a new precept of civility. And what you have there is a situation in which people are arguing that all religions at their core teach the same thing and teach it equally well. And this is manifestly untrue. We have to be in a position to notice the differences among our religions. For instance, in the case of Islam, to notice how certain doctrines within Islam are uniquely culpable for Muslim violence, for the unique character of Muslim violence we see practiced throughout the world at the moment. The religious moderates are not in a good position to notice this because they have this notion that all religions at their core are equal. It's ironic that only our own religious dogmatists, like the Jerry Falwells of the world, are in a position to say that Islam is uniquely problematic.
But why does that tolerance, in your words, drive us toward the abyss?
Well, it keeps us from criticizing the very mad work of religious fundamentalists being done in our country and being done abroad. It keeps us from noticing that we are meandering into a kind of civilizational clash with Islam, because religious moderates are the first to explain away the actions of Muslim terrorists as economic or political outcomes, that somehow this is not their faith, that these are, you know, bad people would do bad things anyway. This is manifestly untrue. Religious ideas really do have consequences. And people do not, mechanical engineers and architects don't normally fly planes into buildings at 400 miles an hour. There are consequences to believing you're going to get to paradise. And religious moderates are in some sense blinded by their own moderation. They don't really believe the jihadist when he looks into the video camera and says, "We love death more than the infidels love life." They don't really believe he's being candid about his state of mind. Well, I don't know what more evidence you need when he then subsequently blows himself up. It seems to me as a rhetorical device, it's rather persuasive. I'm inclined to take him at his word.
Jack Beatty, young Sam Harris is standing up here and right into the teeth of the gale and saying, "I'm not going with this kind of theme of the century so far, that religion is right on and should be in the White House and everywhere else." I mean, he's kicking back in every direction here and saying it is the problem. This is way outside. This is over the taboo right now.
Praise the Lord and pass the ammunition. I'm all for this. I think religion deserves all kinds of rationalistic criticism. If you read stuff from the 1920s, you'll see, my gosh, you couldn't even write such things today about religion, and we're so far advanced over the 20s. But, you know, we've just had the 20th century. State violence everywhere in the name of secular ideologies killed millions, maybe approaching a billion persons in this 20th century. Then, since 9/11, what have we had? Well, 9/11, true, the terrorists used religious words and imagery and so on. But a study of all suicide bombings since they began in the 80s found that in every case, and they're different religions and so on, religious language was used, but in every case there was a nationalist motive. That is to say, foreign troops were occupying places that the suicide bomber wanted them to get out of. And they were all done against democracies which can be influenced by such things. Then you look at Darfur. That's an example of mass violence, but that's the typical state story again. State violence,
Sudan, yeah.
Ethnic cleansing. States have been doing this for 500 years. And look at Iraq. Aggressive war. One state waging war on another and taking it over. Why? Because it has the power to do so. That's as old as states, too. So here are three sort of, I think if God were looking down and didn't have red, white, and blue in his veins, he'd see these things as somewhat all equal. You know, lots of killing going on these fronts. But he wouldn't notice religion necessarily as at the center of them. He'd see states, state power, and stateless actors protesting against it.
So set religion aside, and you see plenty of state shenanigans, and that's the kindest possible word. We're gonna have to talk more about this. Sam Harris, stand by. Jack Beatty. We're talking tonight with Sam Harris, author of The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. He's got a full-blown, no apologies, attack on religion and its role on the planet going on here. You can join the conversation. What do you make of Sam Harris's critique? Can we talk about this? Can we take religion off its pedestal just for an hour and look critically at it? Or does that conversation itself offend you? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We are hearing tonight a full-blown, no-apologies attack on religion and its role on the planet today from Sam Harris. He thinks it's a dangerous, destructive force. His new book is The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. You can join the conversation tonight. What do you think? Is religion, on balance, a positive or negative force in this world, in your life? And is religion the problem in a troubled, pluralistic world, or is religion the answer? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Sam Harris joins us tonight from Los Angeles. Right now from Chicago, we are joined, and happy to be so, by Martin Marty. He's professor emeritus at the University of Chicago Divinity School, author of Modern American Religion, The Noise of Conflict, and Under God, Indivisible, a big figure in circles that think a lot about religion. Martin Marty, thanks very much for being with us tonight.
Yep.
So you hear the critique from Sam Harris. You've been listening in, and he looks out and he sees religious absolutism, whether it's Islamic or Christian or Jewish, or take it right on down the list, and he says, you know what? On balance, this isn't working anymore. On balance, we've got more destruction than hope, peace, and love growing out of religion. How do you respond to that, Martin Marty?
Well, much of his critique, which I read last summer, is right to the point. A lot of religion is doing a lot of what he's talking about. I don't know how we can quite pose a question on balance, because I doubt whether any individuals or groups look at life that way. When you stand at like a satellite looking at a hurricane 30,000 miles up, you can talk in those terms. But you have to talk about who's at whose bedside, who's counseling whom in addiction, who's inspiring young kids to do good stuff, who's sending people out to do mass suicide. You have to get much closer up than the on-balance question. My interest, let's say, I would accept most of his critique about much of what goes on in religion, but I start at a different place, and that is... I just take for granted that if he had a million books like his, there wouldn't be one fewer people who are religious in the world. Religion is growing, not declining. It's not going to go away. We better get used to it. And therefore, the question is, what are we going to do with it? And I think his solution leaves you between either absolute anti-religion or absolute zealotry. His key word is, I don't know what I'm talking to you, Sam. It sounds funny to talk about him in case you
right.
might be.
Sam's right here, yeah.
Okay. I'm here, Marty.
You, when you use the word moderation to cover the entire ground between aggressive anti-religion and aggressive religion, I think that leaves out probably 4 out of 5 people. Certainly there are Muslims of the sort you describe. I co-edited 5 volumes of 220 scholars studying militant fundamentalisms for 6 years, and we were up close. I didn't get any description of any of our scholars matching your description, namely trying to explain it away. We called religious violence. There are huge libraries on that. My colleague Scott Appleby's at Notre Dame now, the Joan Crock Center, and all they do is chronicle religious violence. But then they ask the question, what do we do about it? And I think that to say everything else is moderation is wishy-washy, is painting it in bright light, is succumbing to violence, is unfair to all the efforts of people who say, better get used to it, it's going to stay.
So, Marty, when Sam Harris says, suggests we've got to get by this, that the things of scientific understanding has advanced over 2,000 years, he says words like God and Allah must go the way of Apollo and Baal, sort of ancient, more or less forgotten gods, or they will unmake our world. And you respond, it's just not going to happen, so learn how to live with religion.
Yeah, the symbols God and Allah and all the others have positives and negatives. And if we just bring up the negatives, that's how they are. They're going to do it. I would say most of the killing in the world today is being done in the name of God and Allah, and most of the healing in the world today is being done in the name of God and Allah. If you take every dimension of people caring for each other and doing charitable works and so on, it's the same force in both cases, and I think we have to put our energy into asking How do you bring the best about? Mary McCarthy, the novelist, is said to have said, though I can't find it in her writing, so if she knew I needed it tonight, she would have said it, that, quote, religion makes good people good and bad people bad. You can be a bad person and you can get born again, and you just, worse, you can be a good person and you get born again, or Buddhist enlightenment or whatever, and it can be better. So to me, the question is, what are you going to do with this ineradicable thing that is part of the human story?
Sam Harris, here's a pretty fundamental challenge. You look at religion and you write about a kind of equation between religion and reason. You look back to the parallel of alchemy and chemistry. Alchemy is sort of trying to make gold, you know, with voodoo and kind of nonsense pursuits of centuries. Chemistry, a real science. When chemistry came along, alchemy fades away. You seem to suggest that reason will eventually mean religion evaporating somehow. Martin Marty says, look around. This is not going to happen. So you've got to live with it and find a way.
Yeah, well, there are many issues on the table here. I haven't forgotten Jack's retort as well, so I want to see if I
can
shape a response to all of these.
We're keeping you busy here.
Yeah.
I think it's a great conversation to be having.
And by the way, I got a lot out of your book. I'm not just knocking it. I'm answering the questions I was given.
Yeah, I really appreciate being in dialogue with you as well. So first, Dr. Marty has brought up, this link between religion and morality, I think has been oversold to us. I think that people naturally recoil at cruelty, for instance. This is at the core of our ethical intuitions. If you don't already know that cruelty is wrong, you're not going to discover that by reading the Bible, because the Bible is chock full of cruelty. Now, it's true there are sections like the Sermon on the Mount that are beautiful distillations of our highest ethical impulses, but a lot of the Bible really is not that, and you can find reasons for all manner of totalitarian barbarism there. So we recoil from cruelty quite naturally, I would say, and there are experiments with monkeys showing that monkeys recoil from cruelty, at least on other monkeys.
You see, but we also seem to indulge in cruelty pretty naturally.
Things
like the Ten Commandments are laid down to say, stop that and that and that and that, those are cruel.
Yeah, but the Ten Commandments are laid down in the context of chapters that tell you to kill people for everything, for working on the Sabbath, for you kill children for talking back to their parents. There's really it's not a good document to guide us in our search for tolerance and whatever psychological transformation that would allow us to love our neighbors effortlessly. We can do better than the full contents of the Bible, and we certainly can do better than believing it was written by the creator of the universe.
If that's true, then go to Jack Beattie's point about the history of secular states in the 20th century and the oceans of blood on their hands.
Right. Well, I think it is a misdiagnosis of the problem to talk about Stalinism, say, as reason run amok. That was not too much reason. Stalinism was a kind of political religion. It was not otherworldly in the sense of ordinary religions, but it was a brittle ideology that disavowed reason and genuine science at every turn. There, tens of thousands of scientists went to the gulag for not propping up Stalin's infatuation with Lysenko's biology, a discredited form of biology at that point.
Well, so you don't like that kind of secularism either, but it was...
Well, It was militantly atheistic, but it was not a rational dialogue. These are, you know, Heinrich Himmler thought that the Aryans had descended from space and had been preserved in ice since the beginning of the world, and he created a meteorological division of the Reich to look for this.
Maybe a rational dialogue is too much to hope for. Maybe human beings just don't produce that on a large scale. Maybe religion's in part to recognize that and confront it, deal with it.
Well, but see, we do in every other area of our lives, and it's really not surprising to me that religion is as influential as it is still and not everywhere. We should point out that if you go to Sweden, only 10% of people believe in God, and they're not cannibalizing themselves and having sex with their children. These are societies that are just as moral as ours, perhaps more so. And yet they are quite secular by comparison to America and certainly by comparison to the Middle East. So,
and what about Martin Marty's point that if we take your path, we're left with absolute anti-religion as a position or absolute zealotry? I hear Dr. Marty standing up for those moderate religious people in the middle of that conversation.
Yes, yeah, I disagree with this because, to take myself personally, I'm someone who is really deeply committed to ethics and to spiritual experience. I am fascinated by spiritual experience. I've spent probably 2 years in silence on meditation retreats trying to discover what sort of transformation of my mind is possible on the basis of really sustained introspection. And I've done this in a Buddhist context, and I have not taken on Buddhism as a religion, but I have no doubt that there are fascinating things to discover about the human mind and real transformative work that we can do on ourselves in the context of trying to deepen our wisdom and compassion and trying to be more like Jesus. I mean, Jesus is a great example of whether he's partly fictional or perfectly true, of somebody we might want to be like, at least in half his moods in the New Testament. But what I'm arguing is that there's no reason to believe anything on insufficient evidence in order to do this.
So just look at it in a contemporary, in a scientific way, a soulful way, you're saying, but leave off the religion. Our callers want to join us. I want to begin to invite them in. David's calling from Boston. Hi, David. You're on the air.
Thank you very much. This is an awesome program and a very hot topic these days. The question I have for Sam, I haven't read the book. It sounds like he has a very similar belief structure as I do, and I wonder if his book delves into the original purposes for religion, which I contend include things like to explain the unexplainable, include bringing politics and some military and structure and morals and ethics to a society that was becoming agrarian and needed some means to sustain itself. And then I go further to wonder if, in a separate question, religion can't be subsumed as Christianity subsumed other religions by leveraging the different pieces of society that have taken over those pieces. As I see it today, religion really only still gives good credence to spirituality and perhaps a certain community good that isn't, that in and of itself separates it, and I don't know other pieces of our society that can take on
this. So you're agreeing with Sam Harris that society could move past religion at this point, David?
100%, it's been my contention that religion created more problems, more disparity, more differentiation between people, and created more ill will than good.
David, we've got it. Sam Harris, there's a kind of a here and a seconding the motion from our caller.
Yeah, his first question about the evolution of religion, both culturally and perhaps biologically, I really don't go into that. Clearly, we come into this world hardwired to feel in relationship to the world around us, to feel in relationship to others, and to, in some basic sense, broadcast our subjectivity onto the processes in the world that we don't understand. And science really has been, through the centuries, a process of divesting the world of that kind of subjectivity so that you begin to understand that rain clouds are not angry gods. They are physical processes. And I don't really go into that, but clearly we have something. Religion has served a purpose. At least this kind of broadcasting of our subjectivity onto the world has served a purpose. But there are many things in evolution, in the evolution of our species, that have served a purpose which we are busily trying to divest ourselves of. You know, take rape as one example. There's no doubt that rape is biologically advantageous. Now, we are now at a point where we're no longer beholden to mere biology. And clearly, no one would argue that rape should be preserved in any sense because it got us here.
Martin Marty, how about it? Sam Harris says, let's get past this the same way we got past the divine right of kings and feudalism and slavery and the caste system. I don't know about rape, but what about the argument?
Well, what I don't understand is why he's fundamentalist about religion but not about science. That is, everything he just said about scientific change, you could say about religion. In his book, he has a big chapter about the Inquisition. Pretty hard-pressed to find a lot of people being burned at the stake in Christian soil, which is one-third of the human race these days. I'm not going to advertise the virtues. I've, I believe with Pogo, we have faults we haven't even used yet. Mm. But it's a very static view of religion. If something ever once happened in a book from the past or whatever, we're being thrown back into that. And I just see a very different kind of people emerging in the faith communities today. The other thing I would like to go back to and hear the other two and the callers on is this kind of capital R rationality. I don't know where to look for it. It seems funny to celebrate rationality and reason this way at a time when the postmodernists are relativizing it and saying everybody's reason belongs to somebody mm-hmm. who has a body, who's in a community, and you get a very different reasonable answer depending on who you are and where you are. Reason's in real trouble, and I'd like to see it rescued some. I'm a child of the Enlightenment, but I don't know where I would look for it. Yes, they're noble individuals. Any cause I'm involved with, Protestant, Catholic, Jew, we better count on some good secularists with us. They're very often ethical people. But I think as far as nurturing it in communities is concerned, we're talking about the world. We're talking about peasants in Goa. We're talking about, the Swedes. We're talking about people everywhere. And how rationality suddenly is above the pack. I think the Leninists thought they were rational, and the Stalinists thought they were rational, and the Himmlerites thought they were rational. They weren't, but they were doing it in a celebration of the alternative to faith.
Jack Beattie, how about it? If Sam Harris wants us to swing from religion to reason and rationality, Martin Marty warns us that that may not be the stoutest branch either.
Well, it hasn't held up very well, and with reasonable people with PhDs in reason, calling reason into question, we're into a new world, and I agree. It'd be nice to go back to that Enlightenment day of you know, people could talk about nature and nature's God, and we all knew what that was, and things were self-evident and so on, but they're not, and they're much more problematic on the reason side. And even scientists talk about the way in which phenomena are changed by the scientists' observations.
But with all that, Jack, you must have some sympathy for Sam Harris, who feels like he's trying to shake off old dogma from thousands of years ago that may not be most relevant anymore.
Yeah. Well, I certainly... Yeah, go ahead, Professor Marty.
Yeah, I have great sympathy for that. I think the religion, first of all, a lot of religion is rational. There are a lot of reasonable features in it. Religion is not always, as described, irrational. It reaches in different dimensions of life than irrationality is the only polarity. But I'm very much, yes, I'm a son of Descartes. I'm a son of, I think, therefore I am. I don't want a university that doesn't have skeptical reason. I don't want a laboratory that isn't asking critical questions about the cancer cells. I don't want politicians. Well, I better not get into that. They're not very rational these days. But I would like to think that politicians would use reason and debate somewhere. But you don't see a lot of it around. And I think we have to ask, in what context is this wonderful thing called reason appearing?
Martin Marty, Jack Beattie, and Sam Harris, author of The End of Faith. Please stand by. We have to take a short break. We're hearing a full-blown, no-apologies attack on religion and its role on the planet today. You can join the conversation. Can conflicting religious absolutes safely share a world armed to the teeth with destructive weapons? Can humans be good without God? And if religion isn't the bastion of morality, will we have one? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're hearing tonight a full-blown attack on religion. Talk about outside the mainstream conversation today. On religion and its role on the planet, our guest is Sam Harris. He's author of the new book, The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. We're also honored to be joined tonight by Dr. Martin Marty, Professor Emeritus at the University of Chicago Divinity School, author of Modern American Religion, and our own Jack Beattie. You can join this conversation. What do you think? Is religion, on balance, a positive or negative force in the world today in your life? And is religion the problem in a troubled, pluralistic world, or is religion the answer? Is it time to move past religion or to embrace it? We're at 1-800-423-8255. That's 1-800-423-TALK. Imran is calling from Ashland, Massachusetts. Hi, Imran. You're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Well, thanks.
I just wanted to say that getting back to the point about, you know, intellectual honesty, I mean, there are plenty of scientific theories that are being put out there that are just as fantastic as the belief in God. And I think if you look at cosmology, some of the latest thinking is that the universe has, you know, expanded and collapsed a multitude of times, and that, you know, there are such things as, you know, parallel universes. Even though there is nobody who's ever witnessed any of these events, yet scientists seriously entertain them. And so,
of course, they're projecting off their understanding of physics to build these hypotheses, Imran?
Well, yeah, that's true. But I think if you look at something, I mean, if you look at what they're actually saying, it's just as fantastic, I think, as the idea of a prime mover.
Imran, stand by. Sam Harris, you want to address Imran directly? He's saying science is just as fantastic as religion.
Well, I think that certainly overstates the case. It's some of these theories, certainly within cosmology and physics, can seem as fantastic to the layperson. And, you know, Jack alluded to the observer changing the world, and that's a very old result in quantum mechanics. So quantum mechanics fundamentally is spooky. And the problem with quantum mechanics from a layperson's point of view is that it doesn't give any clear image of the world that is not spooky. And so the difference, however, is that nothing depends on our finding a quantum mechanical picture of the universe that isn't spooky. There's no decisions about medical research. There's no there are no wars being fought over this. People are not, our world is not being balkanized into separate moral communities on the basis of these ideas. These ideas actually are cashed out by very rigorous rationality. It just happens to be mathematics that is not mapping onto our world in a intuitively realistic sense. And so that conversation is going to go on for decades. But at the moment, nothing in terms of the human happiness and suffering turns on its resolution. What I argue in my book is that almost everything turns on our finding some way to become identified as a single human community, not Muslims against Christians against Jews, sometime in the next century. And time is very much against us in this. And I mean, one thing that Dr. Marty pointed out is that, you know, we're no longer burning heretics at the stake in the West, and that's a very good thing. But what we have to credit for that transformation of Christianity is secularism, is scientific progress, secular politics, secular dialogue. You don't find reasons to stop doing that, really, in the Bible, certainly not in a literal construal of the Bible. What you find is that over hundreds of years, that kind of barbarity becomes unsustainable. But it comes from outside. It comes from the doors leading out of religious literalism really don't open from the inside.
Imran, thanks for your call. And Marty, on that point, let me just put that to you. You've studied religion for a long time. Sam Harris looks at it and sees barbarity and cruelty. What's your assessment? Are there things that intrinsic to religion that produce cruelty? Is there a correlation there?
Yes, there is, and there is where one of my areas of agreement would come with him. Religions, I didn't know how to answer the question before that the caller in had as to when religion gets started in various cultures. But religion is born of awe, A-W-E.
Yes.
You stand in the presence. Moses is out there. A bush is burning. He hears a voice. Take the shoes off your feet. The ground you're standing on is holy ground. The Buddhist meditation is awe. Et cetera, et cetera. And so it's dangerous stuff. It's hot stuff because what usually follows then is the person who's been awed is not tyrannized. The other God is not the tyrant who's going to demolish him or her, but rather someone who then impels you to form community, try this experience out on others, and then carry on a mission. Get my people out of slavery in Egypt or lead an army against the infidel. We don't know which direction it'll go. But I think that's the root of it, and I think that's what leads a lot of people to give their lives, literally, for other people in the name of faith, just as they kill in the name of it. So I guess throughout, I'm coming back to the same theme, I certainly don't want to pull off religion against science. We need all the help we can get. I'm not interested in pulling off religion, which is thousands of different kinds of things over against reason, which is thousands of kinds of things. I think the community that Sam's just describing has to include religious and non-religious around the world, pooling our gifts, pooling our resources. But the notion that in the 22nd century, suddenly the human race is going to come to a common agreement, that's the most terrifying thing I've ever heard, because I've never heard of a human combine that big without tyranny and totalitarianism, et cetera.
And you mean Sam Harris's vision of common agreement around reason or rationality, let's say?
Yeah, well, again, I'm just stuck back. It isn't going to happen. Thomas Mann, in his novel, says the world has many centers, and there's no way they're going to all converge on one thing. So if they're not going to converge on one thing, we have to ask how they're going to relate to each other. And I think the notion that the moderate tolerance is the only alternative, here I go for 20 seconds. I have a book coming out next month called When Faiths Collide, and it agrees with Sam that tolerance is a very weak virtue. Tolerance today has come to mean, if I don't believe very much and I can get you to believe as little as I do, we'll get along well. I'm interested in the passionate faith of the Gandhis and the Bonhoeffers and the Martin Luther Kings and the Dorothy Days and the Thomas Mertons, who use their own commitment as a warrant to celebrate the integrity of the other. And I think we have to look for these other kinds of alternatives.
Samuels, how about
it? Can I jump in here?
Yes, please.
I think there's a misunderstanding brewing, because the kind of convergence I'm arguing for really is just an agreement to keep the conversation going by certain rules. I'm really arguing for new rules of conversation and that this conversation be open-ended. And what I'm arguing in my book is that the only thing that guarantees open-ended collaboration among human beings is a willingness to have our beliefs and behaviors updated and modified by the power of conversation, by the power of argument, by new evidence. Science does this pretty impeccably. Now, not all scientists agree. We don't have this monolithic totalitarian convergence of viewpoints, but the conversation is open, and it is just acknowledged that if an experiment is valid, if it's testing anything about the nature of the universe, really, whether it's run in Baghdad or run in Los Angeles doesn't matter. I believe this is true in spiritual matters and ethical matters as well, and we simply need to extend the same rules of conversation to those domains. And religious dogma is the antithesis of that. As long as faith is a conversation stopper, and we just have to recognize how egregious this would be if someone were doing it now in the name of Zeus. You know, nobody's dying for Zeus now. No politician can get elected talking about how Zeus is behind us in our war on terror. And yet it's not that somebody in the 3rd century figured out that the biblical God really exists and Zeus doesn't. This is an accident of history that we are stuck with one imaginary friend as opposed to another. And we're paying, as I've said many times, really an astonishing price for it, and we're not even talking about it.
Marty, how about it? Can old skins of religion still be shed and give way to a more communal conversation, as Sam Harris describes?
Well, I think they do it all the time. The horrible, horrible record of Christians versus Jews took a very different turn when the Jews were invited to the Vatican Council 40 years ago this very year, and the Pope got off the throne and embraced each one and whispered, "I'm Joseph, your brother." He's reaching into one of the deep myths or stories, and it brought about a significant change. It didn't solve everything, but it sure brought a different change. Protestant versus Catholic, 40 years ago, two days ago, the decree on ecumenism. It just about ended the war between Protestants and Catholics. So I think that it's evolving all the time. But I think the notion that religion would have to operate the same way science does is what the philosophers called a category mistake. When Basil Fawlty's motor car drives along and the motor stops, he grabs a twig and hits it on the hood, is a category mistake. And I think that religion has to be certified the same way science does, the same kind of evidence, I think is a category mistake. I want science to do exactly what Sam's describing. I think religion should be in on supporting it. But it won't give the answer to the heart's questions that religion sets out.
But Marty, Sam Harris looks at the history of religion, religious wars aplenty. Then he looks at the power of religion today, very strong. And he looks at modern technology, and particularly destructive technology, nuclear weapons at the apex, and says, these are too dangerous to inhabit the planet together. The absolutism of religion, you know, whether you're talking about Christian-Islam clash or some other, is going to get us in more trouble than we can handle here when it's mixed with this technology.
I agree with that, but back up a minute. When you slid past science, invention, and technology so fast, religion didn't invent mustard gas or nerve gas or the bomb. Religion didn't invent the weaponry, everything like that. Religious people use these things, but these were done by the most rational, calculating scientists who could figure out the bore of a gun and the power of a gunpowder and so on. The issue is, what are humans going to do with these things that they invent? But again, those were all products of rationality and reason in their own time. And they're transcended today, though their legacy is, alas, still with us. I don't want anything at the end of this conversation to suggest that I'm minimizing the horrors of what's going on in the name of religious killing today. It's my business to chronicle it, and it's there. But the question is, what do we do about it? And I don't think the alternative is going to be to dream that in the 22nd century, rationalist science will have prevailed, when it has its own bad history, and I don't see the signs that it's getting better.
And Sam Harris, you pointed out yourself the scientists who said that this war between reason and faith is over. I mean, Einstein, Carl Jung, Max Planck, Freeman Dyson, Stephen Jay Gould, why are they wrong and you're right?
Well, they've been kind of misconstrued in terms of how they were putting faith back on the shelf. For instance, Einstein has been widely quoted as referring to God. God doesn't play dice with the universe and so forth. But he's not talking about God in the Christian sense, or in any religious sense. The issue, I agree with Dr. Marty that we really need to look at the end game here and wonder what human beings are going to do. We have all these tools. We got them somehow. We have all these different religious identities. We got them somehow. What are we going to do? And what I'm asking people to consider is that there really is no end game here with separate fundamentalisms, with separate dogmas about what happens after death and who goes to paradise for calling God by the right name. Aspiring martyrs, to take Islam as a specific example, are never going to make good neighbors. I mean, there's really a deal breaker here. And unless we can find some way to erode these separate moral identities, we are just going to go over the falls together.
But you go after the moderates who would try to be ecumenical, who would try and be tolerant across these lines, and say they drive the world to the abyss.
I do. Clearly, moderation is an improvement over fundamentalism. We want, if I could wave a magic wand and make everyone moderate, I would certainly do it. It's just that moderate religious discourse now is deluding itself with notions like Islam is a religion of peace, been hijacked by extremists. That is just not true. And you only have to read the books to discover it's not true. You only have to read the Arab press to discover it's not true. And so we have to come to terms with both the differences among our religions, and we have to find some way of getting what we think we're getting out of religion, strong communities, spiritual experience, ethical impulses, in some way that does not require people to be irrational, because irrationality stops the conversation.
Jack Beatty, just 20 seconds here, but in a crowded planet with nukes and all the rest, you can't blame Sam Harris for being worried.
No, but I can't imagine the moral condition of mankind without the Muslim faith's insistence on charity, the Catholic Church's criticism of capitalism, or Judaism's insistence on repairing the world. Hard to imagine a world without those things.
Well, there it all is, in one big stew. We'll have to try and make it through. Martin Marty, wonderful of you to join us tonight. Thank you very much.
I had a great conversation with Sam, and I got out of your book.
Thanks for being with us.
Thank you, Dr. Marty.
And Sam Harris, author of The End of Faith, Religion, Terror, and the Future of Reason. Thanks very much for being with us.
Thank you.
Jack Beatty, thanks for joining us, my friend.
Thank you.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation at onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.